ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये।
We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 4, Chapter 30, text number 8.
Sri Bhagavan Ubacha Varam Vranidvam Padrambo Yuyam Indripanandana Sauhardhina Pratak Dharmas Tushtoham Sauritinabaha Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
The Supreme Personality of God had said. That's why you all came here today, is to hear what the Supreme Personality of God had said. He came from many places all over the world, and they sat here and they wanted to know, what did the Supreme Personality of God had say? Right? I'm correct in that, I think. Yes.
Varam,
benediction.
Vrinidvam,
ask. Badram, good fortune.
Vaha,
of you.
Yuyam,
you.
Me,
from me.
Nirpanandanaha,
O sons of the king.
So hard heena,
by friendship,
apratak,
non-different,
dharmaha,
occupation,
tushtaha,
pleased,
aham,
I,
sorutina,
by friendship,
vaha,
of you. Translation: the Supreme Personality of God had said, my dear sons of the king, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction from me. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of God had said,
the Supreme Personality of God had said,
my dear sons of the king,
I am very much pleased by the
friendly
relationships among you.
All of you are engaged in one occupation.
All of you are engaged in one occupation.
Devotional service.
I am so pleased with your mutual friendship.
That I wish you all good fortune.
Now you may ask a benediction of me.
Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Since the sons of King Prachanda Parishat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachanda Parishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or render service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions, and consequently they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions.
There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to his devotees, as indicated in this verse. We can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the king, to the sons of King Prajina Parishat.
Reshi Bhagavadu Vachavaram Vrinidvam Badrambo Yuyam Mendra Panandana Saurardhina Pritag Dharmas Tushtoham Sodradhena Vaha.
The Supreme Personality of God had said, "My dear sons of the king, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction from me." So these are the sons of Prachina Barishat, the Prachetas, who together performed devotional service and worshiped the Lord in cooperation. And now Krishna is expressing his appreciation for their cooperation. One of the endlessly fascinating aspects of the Lord's creation is that there's no living entity or particle or circumstance that's the same as another. In this entire creation, material or spiritual, everything is unique. It's called Vishesha. And this is a cause of ananda, because there's unlimited variety. And the Vedas say, Eko Bahu Sham. Originally, the one desired to become many. Why? For his enjoyment. Because variety is the mother of enjoyment, and when there's a variety of living entities, there are varieties of relationships. However, when there are individuals, there's individual free will, and there's individual choice, and you can't take for granted that everyone will want the same thing. In fact, you can take for granted the opposite, and that is that every living entity will have its own volition and therefore its own particular desires. And therefore there's facility for every living entity to try to fulfill those desires. For instance, in the material world, which is a overall facility for those who wish to express their desires independently of the Lord's, it is a special facility for that. And within it, there's plenty of variety, 8,400,000 species of life through which living entities can express themselves, try to enjoy in various ways. And so, when there's cooperation, there's a unique situation, because it's not necessarily natural for living entities to cooperate. For instance, we see that there's an accumulation of living entities in this room, all of you great souls, who have cooperated, made the journey here to come to this temple this morning. It's raining outside, but you came here to sit, and now we're cooperating. We cooperated in kirtan. Everyone did their part, and now we're sitting here cooperating. Everyone's doing their part, all in concert to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this verse specifically says that such cooperation, in order to perform devotional service, is pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's much the point of this verse. and that this cooperation is divine, especially when it's, or only when it's in relationship to the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada mentions in his purport that people do cooperate in the material world, but only officially. Such cooperation is contrived for the sake of material enjoyment. We'll work together because that way we can divide up the profits. Thieves work together sometimes and they'll rob a bank and then they go off in a secret place and they sit down and they say, okay, let's divide this honestly. And in the material world, there's a way in which little materialists come together and they cooperate for the sake of exploiting the Lord's creation, resources and so forth. People may be nice when you get on an airline in order to fulfill their duty of serving you something because it's an official business and they have to in order to keep your business. But there's a sense, there's tit for tat. They want something in return. So this cooperation is called official or artificial. But when there is a sense of love for Krishna and the devotees come together and cooperate, then you have something extraordinary. This is bhakti. Devotees working together as individual souls to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And practically, in his writings, Prabhupada makes such cooperation synonymous with bhakti. When one group of devotees decides to cooperate together to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is bhakti. And as Prabhupada expanded his movement all over the world, he emphasized various principles of cooperation. For instance, he said that cooperation was really based, and this is the non-official brand of cooperation. There's official where you're getting paid, so you have to cooperate to get the reward. But then the non-official, or the bhakti brand, is by love and trust. If you love someone, then there's a natural way in which you may want to cooperate with them. You see what they're doing, what their agenda is, and then you make your agenda one with their agenda. This is what Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 18th chapter, of course, we talked about Sarva Dharman Parityaja, and we can't talk about that verse enough. But leading up to that, Krishna talks about how he has a particular plan for living entities, and if they simply cooperate with the plan, then everything will come out all right. In fact, earlier in the third chapter, he says, "Ye me matam idam nityam anutishtanti manava," that if you find out what my instructions are and follow them without envy, then you'll be successful without a doubt. And when one finds out about Krishna's position and his magnanimity, all of the glories of Krishna, not the least of which is that everything emanates from him. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante imam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Then Krishna says, one who comes to this understanding that Krishna is the original divine source of all of us and of all energies, everything's coming from him, then he says that there'll be a sense of love. And that sense of love is exhibited through one's cooperation, one sincere cooperation with the plan of the Lord, and also with those who are following the plan of the Lord. And therefore, love and trust is the basis of the Krishna consciousness movement, or any Krishna conscious movement. There's a necessity for this non-official cooperation, which is based on a deeper principle. That we love Krishna, we have realization that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore we agree to work together to please him. And in that, there's a development of a sense of love and trust, which is very precious, because that
is not something that comes immediately. It requires some time and experience. For instance, if you're working with someone, it takes some time to see that they're trustworthy. And that doesn't happen overnight. That happens over a long period of time, seeing that you can trust someone. Such a fragile element also. Trust can be broken, and then it takes a long time to repair. And therefore, it should be cherished. When we have trust in others, we should protect it. And when others have trust in us, we should be very careful to protect it, because that is the glue that holds together the Krishna consciousness movement. There is no other means to actually hold together a Krishna consciousness movement. You can try to do so artificially, but then you won't have Krishna consciousness, you'll have another kind of consciousness. Real cooperation is based on this love and trust. And therefore, Rupa Goswami describes how one develops loving relationships between devotees. He says there's six activities, beginning with dadati pratigrinati, kuhyam akyati prachiti, bhunte bojayate chaiva, shadvidam pratilakshanam. Shadvidam pratilakshanam. That is six activities: giving gifts, accepting gifts, giving prasad, accepting prasad, and revealing one's mind in confidence and having others reveal their minds in confidence. This, he says, are the six exchanges of love between one devotee and another. And Prabhupada mentions in his purport that the Krishna consciousness movement was founded on these principles. When Prabhupada came to New York City, he had a temporary place to stay in a loft, which incidentally was with some American who was a young boy who was crazy. Nonetheless, Prabhupada began his loving exchanges there by cooking a big feast and then inviting people to come to the loft. And Srila Mukunda Maharaj describes in his book about the early days, and he was there, so he had an eyewitness account, gives an eyewitness account, that Prabhupada went around personally with these pots that he had cooked in. He didn't have a lot of facility, but whatever facility he could find, he used, he cooked. When Maharaj describes how he felt some need for reciprocation, not a need, but just an urge to reciprocate. When someone gives you something out of love, it's actually very difficult to reciprocate, because you think, now what do I do? It can be something insignificant. But if it's given without any expectation in return, only out of love, then the impetus to do something in return is natural. But then what can you give back except for love? If you try to give something in kind, then it seems artificial. And therefore, Prabhupada describes how by us giving to others in these six loving exchanges, people will reciprocate. He said then people came forward and reciprocated. And Mukunda Maharaj describes how he himself felt after meeting Prabhupada and being a recipient of his gifts and his love and revealing his heart, that he wanted to do something in return. He was instrumental in getting that first apartment that Prabhupada stayed in 26 Second Avenue, and helping them get started. And Mukunda Maharaj and others got sucked in. To what? Basically because of Prabhupada's loving mood. And then after some time observing him, they developed trust. And because of the love and trust, there was an impetus to do service. And that is the main substance, the substantive principle of the Krishna conscious movement. Prabhupada mentioned love and trust. Then there's cooperation. And then there's a lot of description in the scriptures about how to cooperate, because we may say love and trust, but then when it comes down to interacting with others, we may feel some friction. In fact, we will feel some friction. One of the instructions that was given by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj was leaving home to go out and find God so he could ask for something to surpass his father because he was angry. Narada told him the way to cooperate with other living entities. First, he said, when you meet people who are superior to you, that you should respect them. And when you meet somebody who's the same as you, on the equal level, then you should make friendship. And when you find somebody that's lower than you, you should show them compassion. And he said, in this way, if you interact with other living entities that you meet in that way, then you'll never feel any misery in this life. It's a way of cooperating. And this kind of mood is the description, the edict in the Srimad Bhagavatam also for those who are teaching the Krishna consciousness movement and spreading it all over the world, to see the different categories of living entities and to interact with them in different ways. So first of all, Ishvare taradineshu bali sheshu dvisatsucha prema maitri kupopeksha yakaroti samadhyamaha. Havi Yogendra says that you should see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you should recognize his unique position, and you should develop love for him. Then he said you should see the devotees, who recognize who's a devotee. And amongst the devotees, you should make appropriate friendships. Then he said you should recognize the envious, people who hate God. And those people you should avoid. You'd be upeksha. Interestingly, Jiva Goswami says that although the devotees are asked to avoid the envious, when they distance themselves from them, they should also meditate and discuss ways that they can somehow or other bring them closer to Krishna. And he says this is sat achar, this is good behavior, the good behavior of the devotees. Although they avoid the envious people, they're still praying for them and they're still thinking how can they also be helped. And finally, there are those who are innocent. And for the innocent, one should pour out as much mercy as possible in order to help them in various ways. So there is a lot of instruction about how to cooperate in one's service to Krishna and just in general when meeting other kinds of living entities. And one of the other principal ways in which we can cooperate is through clear communication, because living entities have different ways of communicating. And it takes time and effort to communicate to others deeply so that you can bridge gaps. Goshti Anandis are those that live together in communities in order to cooperate for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhajan Anandis, on the other hand, have the luxury of going off by themselves and not having to cooperate with anybody. Those who go off into the forest sometimes perform severe austerities like sitting in cold water up to their necks in the wintertime, or surrounding themselves by fire in the summer and tolerating that in order to come to an out-of-body experience. But Goshti Anandis don't have to go anywhere, because learning to cooperate with disparate living entities, with disparate opinions on spiritual subject matters even, is even harder, more austere than living in a cold water up to one's neck in the wintertime or sitting in a hot fire. So there's a great premium on cooperation And that's why the Prachetas got such attention from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they worked together to do their service, to please Him. So if we take time to communicate with others and try to deeply understand what their motivations are, their needs, interests, and concerns, then we'll be better at cooperating. And it's also a principle of cooperation that we should keep Krishna in the center and understand that we have a common mission. We're all working to serve Krishna. As Prabhupada mentions here, the devotees understand that there's one common mission, and that is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore we can put our energies in one place. And this is highly effective. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Jagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Yatva Mam Shantim Richati. If you make me the center, and this is practical because it means that you understand that I'm the enjoyer, and that I'm the owner of everything, and I'm the best friend of everyone. These three considerations. And then if we work together to give our resources to Krishna, our energy and our love and attention, then we'll feel reciprocated in our cooperation. Because Krishna can unlimitedly take what we give Him and then give it back in reciprocation. Just like the stomach is the central feature, according to the Ayurveda, of one's physical body. If your digestion's working well, then you can be happy in life and everything else works. It's a sign of health. And there's a way in which one time, Prabhupada said, all the other senses that are working for the stomach went on strike because they analyzed that they're working hard all the time to buy food, prepare it, and then feed it to the stomach, and the stomach's only sitting there digesting. So they said, no more of this, we'll work independently. And after 5 days, they all felt so weak that they reconvened and they went back and said, okay, we changed our mind, we're going to feed the stomach. So Prabhupada compares the non-cooperation of living entities to this strike by the senses. And when the senses came back and fed the stomach, then they realized they became nourished also. They became satisfied. So Krishna is the one who can take everything that we give and also give it back simultaneously, so that we're all nourished, because we're tiny parts and parcels of Krishna. Anyone who realizes this can then give his or her full energy to feeding Krishna and to giving their love and attention to Krishna without holding anything back. And this is vitally important. And what else can we hold back besides resources? We might consider that I have to take credit for it. And this is also a critical point of very high-level cooperation. If one is able to do one's service without taking credit, then one can increase one's service unlimitedly. In fact, even one of the American presidents, Harry Truman, said, it's remarkable how much you can get done when you don't care who gets the credit. And so those who realize that by giving to Krishna without any motivation, they're automatically becoming satisfied, may forego the credit that normally they would need to have before offering their service. And this is something that is recognized even in secular circles. I think there's a book called The Leader with No Title that became very popular.
the idea of doing service without having to claim anything in return and say, oh, I did that. And notice that it's difficult to empower others and to delegate to others service if one has to take credit for it. Because one might even think that, okay, I'll delegate this service, but then if they do better than I was doing, then how am I going to look? But who cares? If one understands the principle that as long as Krishna's pleased, and that's my main goal in life, and everyone has that enlightened understanding, then why wouldn't everyone simply give as much as possible without and empower others to do the best job that they can without taking any credit in return? That's a very favorable position to be in life, is one's main suffering comes from trying to hold on to such designations and take credit. So we can take the spirit of this verse and apply it in our families, in our ashram, whatever ashram we're in, spirit of cooperation, selfless service, and the greater mission of the Krishna conscious movement, and even on a universal level, cooperating with other living entities. When one has this spirit that I'm a servant, and one goes out to meet people here, there, and everywhere in order to assist them in some way, and doesn't have envy of the living entities, then people will feel that cooperative spirit. They'll actually sense something that they haven't sensed before, and that is this person's giving without expecting anything in return. That's love. And that's what actually expands the Krishna consciousness movement. So this verse is a centerpiece in our development of our own practice of Krishna consciousness and the Krishna consciousness movement. Therefore, I selected it today to bring into evidence here in this august assembly for your consideration. And now, since we've read the verse and I said a couple of things about it, we'll take a few reflections, and that way we can try to fluff it out a little bit more. Yes. I would like to welcome all the devotees who join us on the internet. Everyone please turn towards the camera and say, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I'd like to reflect on how with serving with love and with to the common goal, for the common goal of Krishna, devotees can cooperate and it will expand the Krishna conscious society, definitely pretty much. And on the other hand, we know another example of material attempt to cooperate, and as was the communism, for example, in the Soviet Union. So that was the idea too, so that everyone will be equal. No matter how much you do, you will still get your same return. And people were motivated in the beginning, but having trust in the social structure, but then it didn't bring them any happiness, so it collapsed eventually. Hmm. So that's an example of how the material one doesn't work.
Very interesting. Yeah, that's a good example. If it's artificial, you may concoct some system, but if there's not a center, Prabhupada brings this up when he's talking to Professor Katovsky in Russia. He said, you have your leader, authority, Acharya Lenin, and we have ours, Krishna. So he said, we're the same on that level, because we both accept some authority. But if one analyzes carefully who Krishna is, who Lenin is, then we can see that Krishna's perfect and Lenin's not, at least according to our calculation. And that's the axiomatic truth, the basis of our Krishna consciousness movement and our basis of our epistemology. So this can be practiced and understood. What else?
have a question. We all come from different backgrounds, from different parts of the world, with different conditioning and cultural backgrounds. So there's a lot of opportunity for miscommunication. How do we bridge that? Because what I might say and what I might mean may be different from what the person I'm speaking to interprets.
Well, when we were on our yatra this year in Jagannath Puri, before we went to the yatra, we decided that every year we gather together afterwards and we say, how can we make it better? And one of the ways that we talked about was making it focused on giving. It would be a Sankirtan yatra, not just a regular yatra, because I don't know what a regular yatra is necessarily, but we didn't want anyone to feel that this was a way to come and take a vacation or to some come and sightsee or something like that. Not that anybody do that, but we wanted to go in a direction where we felt it was called a Sankirtan service yatra. That's what we named it. And so we geared up for that so that our main focus on the yatra would be to distribute books and prasadam and the holy names wherever we went. So we had devotees from China and Japan and from other parts of the world, from Europe and America, all came together. Some of them didn't, many of them spoke their own languages, but there wasn't a common language that held us all together. So we all sat together and we heard and chanted, and there were translations that took place for those who didn't speak English. And then we went out for our yatra to visit various holy places, and along the way we'd distribute books and prasadam in the holy name. So I was watching and how the Chinese and Japanese devotees were interacting with the local Oriens, because that's an interesting combination. That the Oriens who grew up in Jagannath Puri, who worship Lord Jagannath since their birth, now meet a Chinese. They meet a Chinese woman, an asari, walking down the street, who doesn't speak Oriyan, and who recently discovered Lord Jagannath, but more enthusiastic about it than they are. It's like, yeah, Jagannath, we live with Jagannath. But the Chinese person goes, take this book about Jagannath. We're also giving out Jagannath stickers. So I watched as the people in Jagannath Puri accepted these gifts from the Chinese, Japanese devotees, Europeans, and so forth. It was especially pronounced by the Chinese and Japanese towards the Arians. And I saw that because there was a spirit, a pure spirit of giving, they knew the Chinese devotees, these foreign devotees, didn't want anything in return. They wanted to give something out of the goodness of their heart. And that transcends the culture. I saw how the people became enamored of the enthusiasm of these devotees. Of course, there are some cultural considerations. That's always there. You can't just bypass those. This is called realization. Realization means to have the desire to give Krishna to others, and based on that desire to present it in such a way that it fits the person's frame of reference, which happens to be cultural, you know, related to the body and the way they grew up. So one of the ways I saw that throughout our yatra, we were able to bridge the gap between Americans and Oriens, Chinese and Oriens, is we discovered a cultural aspect of the Oriens, and that is, whenever they do anything spiritual, they make any spiritual transaction, or they do some prayers, they always take their shoes off. So we picked up on that really quickly, because Sankirtan, the mood of Sankirtan is to pick up on the ways in which to cooperate, to build to bridge the gaps, communication gaps. So when we'd walk up to anybody, we'd flip off our shoes. And then immediately they go, you flipped off your shoes? I'm flipping my shoes off now. They'd flip their shoes off, and they'd look like, something's coming here. And then we'd flip our shoes off and then hand them a book. And then they like, oh, this is something. Now the culture was just in a simple gesture. We recognized their culture, and we flipped off our shoes before we'd hand them a book. And then their hearts opened up so that they were able to take it very deeply. And every culture has some shoe flipping process. Whatever it may be, you have to discover it. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's system. He looked around, all around Bengal and India, and he said, oh, okay, people worship sannyasis. He has no business being in the Nivarana ashram, but he said, I'll be a sannyasi. Of course, he can be the best sannyasi of all. He was the most renounced of all. But he did it specifically to flip his shoes off. He put on saffron so everyone would go like, okay, what do you have? That's the prerogative of the teacher of Krishna consciousness. There are two levels that are going on at the same time. One is give Krishna consciousness because everyone's part and parcel of Krishna. The other is how to open the channel. Channel has to be open, so you have to consider both things. Because we live in a bi-dimensional reality. We're partly spirit and we're partly matter. Of course, we're not matter at all, but because I'm identified with matter, I become material. So it matters. Matter matters. When it's in relationship with preaching, we consider that very carefully. So in service, love transcends and pure giving transcends, but it's also wise to observe other people's cultural habits and then conform to those to the degree that one needs to in order to administer, I don't know if administer is the right word, love, to give one's love and to give the gifts one wants to give to other people. That's enlightened living. When one lives to give, and when one schemes how to give in such a way that people can take. There have been a lot of movements in the world in which people brought their philosophy and they said, take, take, but they had a sword. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came like this, take, take, out of love. But there were you can study the histories. There were many religious movements went all over the world, and still are. There's still people that go around and they go like, take it or we'll just kill you. It's like, that's not very subtle. I mean, nobody's going to take that. Nobody even likes it. He was like, take it, I'll just kill you. I was like, why should I take it? We don't even... If that's what's in your heart, that you have to kill me for me to take it, then why should I take it? Love conquers all. But this other idea is not very appropriate for living entities. They don't like that kind of stuff. So we have to figure out what they like. And internally, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we have to discuss amongst ourselves. Prabhupada said, once a year you should go to Mayapur, all of you. That's back when everyone could fit in Mayapur, like the whole movement. A couple pujaris stayed back and everybody else came to Mayapur and we'd all sit around and like, how you all doing? And it's like, yavo, you know, I mean, there are different, different ways in which... he said, come together and discuss how to achieve unity and diversity in Mayapur. That was his main statement. He said, come to Mayapur and discuss for a month. Come together, have a lot of kirtan, have classes here in chant, and also talk about how to achieve unity and diversity. And that's an ongoing project. It's not something that you achieve immediately. And it's not something that once achieved that you can take for granted. It takes dexterity to keep that going. In fact, that's what leadership means. Leadership should be towards achieving this unity and diversity, finding out how to make an environment in which everyone feels safe, no matter what their particular cultural background is. And whatever their bodily proclivities are, they can feel safe in that environment long enough to imbibe the medicine, and they can all take it. And when
people come to a certain level of realization, then they naturally go beyond the limitations of the body and mind and culture and so forth. Okay, we have some comments from our esteemed viewers online.
Thank you so much. So there's Krishna Dulal Prabhu.
Krishna Dulal Ki Jai.
He's asking, Hare Krishna, is it possible to cooperate with someone that does not want to cooperate?
Yeah, that's a great art. And that's what you find in Sankirtan. This is, when you go out into public, of course, in the temple, you may have some consensus about protocol and how to act. But when you go out in public, that's a bigger challenge because people aren't obligated to follow your protocol. And they may treat you in various ways. They may not cooperate at all. But yes, there's a way to invite cooperation from people who don't want to cooperate by conquering them with love. And I've seen it before. And, I mean, living entities are tatasta. They can go any way at any time. They're susceptible to their environment and they're open to suggestion. That's what tatasta means. The tatasta jiva can, it's some, you can whisper something in their ear and they go, okay, I'll go with you then. That happens all the time. That's why people advertise. They put up advertisements and say, little jiva over here. You drink some Coca-Cola. And it's like, okay, I'll drink Coca-Cola. Here, little jiva, smoke a cigarette. And it's like, all right, I'll smoke a cigarette. Because little jiva, anything you tell him, he's open to some suggestion because he's tatasta, a little tiny. His consciousness can be affected. And when you go in public, you don't know what's going to happen. And also, we shouldn't expect that people follow any protocol in public. That one becomes vulnerable. It's good to become vulnerable. You can grow that way. You go out and you make yourself an instrument for Krishna. And don't expect certain kinds of cooperation from little jivas that you meet wherever you go. But do try to develop a sense of appreciation for them. So when, there are actually waves. This is studied. There's a group in Palo Alto, California, a scientific group called HeartMath, and they study how there are actually electromagnetic waves that come from living entities and from the heart. There's especially strong vibration that comes. People, living entities are also sensitive. They can feel our vibration, and if we have a sense of selflessness, that we're going there to serve others, and that we don't want anything in return. We want something in return. We want to take their service for Krishna, but it's not for ourselves. This is the essence of real cooperation. We're doing it for Krishna. Just like even if someone takes a position, and that has to be done in an organization, someone has to take a position of leadership. And this was the idea in this is socialism or communism? Communism. In communism, that there'd be no leader. We'd all just be equal. But in a Krishna consciousness organization, there's a leader, but the leader is a servant leader. The leader is taking, and you have to have a center. It's natural for living entities to look up to a leader. But the leader is, like Prabhupada said, like the viceroy. Viceroy is a representative of the king. The king would send the viceroy to a different country, and people would come and they'd give gifts. And the viceroy had never thought, oh, this is for me. He'd take it back and give it to the king. And so the same way, the servant leaders think like that. Getting back to your question. When one goes into... when one approaches others with this selfless mood of selfless service, they can sense it. It's magical, actually. And you can see that somebody who is non-cooperative can suddenly change their mind. One day I was in Santa Cruz, California, and I was distributing books on the street, and I met this man. He must have been 45 years old, and he had a young daughter, about 12. And I showed him the Bhagavad Gita, and
he was looking it over somewhat skeptically. He said, oh yeah, I know all about this. I know about everything already. There's nothing really new for me, especially this. But, you know, you guys are trying to do something good. And on he looked, and then I said, and he said, so, is it free or something like that? And I said, yes, we refuse to sell it. We just asked for donation. We don't need the money. And I was about to explain more, but as soon as he heard that I wanted something, a donation, then he became extremely agitated. He said, here, take your book back. And then he started talking to his daughter, and he said, see, they're all the same. They just want something. All they want is money. They're doing this for some profit motive. And then he went on a diatribe about how there is no God. The street sign over there and God, it's all the same. And he had many skeptical opinions, vitriolic ideas. He went on and on. And I was standing there with one of the devotees, Shraddhadevi Dasi, and we were just sort of absorbing what he was saying. And we didn't move from the place because he hadn't officially kicked us out of his space. He was just venting. And we absorbed it all. And we just appreciated that he was a living entity. He's just venting. And he's going on. And we're like not resisting him or anything like that. We're just expressing goodwill through our body language. And then after about 5 minutes of a rant, he pulled out $5, he gave me $5, he took the book back, said, gave it to his daughter and said, here, you read it. And Shraddhadevi Dasi and I were standing there just thinking, what just happened? And we analyzed it and we saw because he sensed that we had goodwill. We didn't resist him. We weren't offended by his egoic rant because we had no vested interest. We were simply interested in his welfare. And he sensed it. And he reversed. I mean, I've never seen such a reversal. In wrestling, when you get a reversal, you get extra points. It means you're almost down, and then you're able to turn around and bring the other person. You get extra points. And on Sankirtan, when you get a reversal, we should give extra points for each book. When you sell a book, it's like, how much do you have? You got 10 points for that, not 5, because you got a reversal. They weren't going to take, and then they took. And that can only happen through, of course, this, in my case, in that it was a fluke, but it can only happen through maturity. If one actually has some mature realization and one's presenting like that, then people who are feeling non-cooperative, they'll change their mind. And many people change their mind when they met Prabhupada. There's so many books, like Vishakha Devadasi's book that just came out. She's an excellent writer. Really fantastic. And her new book, her memoir about meeting Prabhupada, she explains in there how she was not inclined at all to the conception of God. In fact, she grew up in a family that convinced her that nature was God and there was no real entity behind it. It just was. And that she was skeptical of the idea of religious institutions and people taking positions of control and then controlling her. And when she came to the Krishna Consciousness Movement, it was actually on official business. She came to photograph the devotees because she's a photojournalist, a very successful one in her early 20s. And she and her then boyfriend, who's now Yadubar Prabhu, her husband, longtime husband, one of the most successful couples in ISKCON, they both came to India for a photo shoot. It just happened to be of the Hare Krishnas. And then they started hearing about Prabhupada, and she describes the way she was thinking about the devotees the whole time, very skeptical. She met Prabhupada, and there was an intangible there where she sensed that he didn't want anything from me. He was only giving love. And even though he was saying things that would have been abhorrent to her previously, she was able to accommodate them because of his demeanor and because of the vibration that was coming from his heart. And then you'll notice in the book, about halfway through, that she completely changes. He was not ready to cooperate. And then all of a sudden, okay, I'm going to cooperate. In fact, I think I'll surrender. And that's what can happen to little jivas. Little jivas could all of a sudden get it in their head after many, many lifetimes of deciding that there is no God and I'm going to make some other system, completely different system, to go against it even. They can meet a devotee and then say, oh yeah, I changed my mind. I'm going to surrender. And all the friends are, what? You're kidding me, right? You're joining the Hare Krishnas. Yeah, I just changed my mind. That can happen at any time. That's why preaching is so exciting. It's the only really dynamic thing that's going on in the universe is Sankirtan. Everything else is predictable because it's all under the modes of material nature. It's in a closed system. But what we're bringing is this different idea. It's like, hey, little jiva, surrender. And by the way, I don't want anything. It's like, what? I never heard of such a thing. It's outrageous. It's fun to be outrageous. And the only way to be totally outrageous is to be a devotee and to say, like, I don't want anything. I just want to surrender to Krishna. And I just want you to surrender to Krishna too, because that's good for you. That's outrageous. And that's a lot of fun. Okay. Oh, Agora?
Yes, thank you so much. Another thought that came to my mind was when you were with the 42-year-old gentleman and his daughter, and you were being totally present and listening to this gentleman, not trying to interrupt him, not trying to correct him, but just being open. What you were doing is you were showing profound empathy to him. And I would like to say that so I've attended a lot of different personal growth groups that Apurva and Kamalini introduced me to, like Landmark Education. I found that Dear Windows, you know, he had been inspired by them. I attended his Life Skills Transformational workshops 3 times. And the main thing we focused on was empathy. Just learning how to listen to another person, and we would facilitate one another asking, what's your current challenge, Vaishnava? Is there something that you're celebrating right now? Is there something that you feel challenged by? And then you just be quiet and allow that person to express themselves, and you connect with them. And I've experienced this in my personal life where when I really try to listen to the other person, even though I may not agree with them, I would watch a transformation take place in front of me, where they would like, because I showed them that courtesy, that the Prophet said in one place, if you're willing to listen to someone speak, you become their friend. There's a friendship, there's a bond. That's what you did for that gentleman. And he felt understood by you, like, and as you said, he saw that you didn't have any other agenda. You were there for him. And then he had a change of heart. Like, oh, here's $5. Give him a book. Give my daughter. He loved his daughter, right? His daughter is his object of affection. And he felt affection from you. And super soul in the heart was dictating to him, just give the guy $5, you know. Stop being a cheapskate. Be nice to your daughter. Anyway, that's just what your words inspired me. That there was a lot of empathy going on, and that's what the world needs. People need to feel acknowledged. They need to feel that that you value them enough, that you'll give them the time of day, and that's what you did.
Yeah, thank you for the observation. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. It's so very, very enlightening and enlightening. And you said something about not wanting to take credit. This is just an example of what I experience on almost a daily basis when we are doing work distribution and encouraging a lot of our devotees who are part of our community to distribute books. So one of the things which I found is that last year when we did 50-50 book distribution, And I said, okay, anybody who does 50 books, we have a Sankirtan bulletin board we put up last year, we put their name on it. So I bought a label maker and I was putting up names of devotees who distributed 50, like, you know, they would buy 50 books from the central book room, and then they distributed their own time during the course of the year. So there was so, I was so surprised that devotees would come and tell me, oh, I've taken 30, okay, I need 20 more. I want my name up. They were wanting their name up on the board, and that's what was kind of their inspiration. And to me, it seemed kind of incongruous to the wanting to do service, which is without fruit or result. But this is kind of an encouragement, and I found that it has been encouraging for us to increase our book distribution more and more. So this year again, I think every month I put books, names of devotees who have taken books, I put their names up. And it seems like it's a kind of an incentive. So, having said that, how do we reconcile that? I'm not wanting to judge any of the devotees because they want to go out and do distribution. And each one of them who's buying books from us is going out and doing distribution. What would you say?
That is, one thing is, it's natural. Competition is natural, and also having a sense that you've accomplished something and seeing your name there is natural also. And Prabhupada also encouraged competition, but he called it transcendental competition. He called it competition in which one didn't have any kind of animus towards those who were doing better. They felt encouraged by them and things like that. So every emotion and every way of moving in the world is also there in the spiritual world. Of course, everything here is a reflection, so it's there also. The coward boys see who can touch Krishna first and so forth. So the reconciliation is that, at least I've found historically, that one has to be careful as a leader to inspire transcendental competition and transcendental recognition, rather than either resorting to communism and saying, you know, just we're all equal, artificially, and also encouraging devotees about the principle of how inspiring it is to not take credit, to try to go that direction. I once talked to Radhanath Maharaj about, you know, management principles and Chopati and things like that many years ago, and he said you really have to talk about the principles that you want to see inculcated in any given community. You have to emphasize them again and again. For instance, you'll notice he emphasizes humility again and again in his classes and Chopati, and after some time it becomes the culture. And of course by his example. And in a similar way, in any environment, whenever you're leading, you have to decide what are the most important principles and then present those through speech, through your example and so forth. My experience has been over time, the tendency is for competition to become overstimulated, and that becomes more of a focus than actually the service of going out and giving to others. And so in our experiment at ISV, I underplayed the stimulation of individual competition. We've done that over many years. And emphasized more teamwork, and that the team should succeed. And not only that, as we're working as a team, we should also be thinking that we're simply a laboratory and we're working as service to the rest of the world, and whatever we discover that works, we should export as soon as possible and share it with others. That's why these SOS, this idea of Sankirtan orientation sessions that came up, because they said, okay, whatever we have, we want to share with others. Let them come in and let's be one world team. And it's worked in North America also. 5 years ago, we talked with the GBC and temple presidents, and we all decided we'd be a continental team, and we'd measure against ourselves. And what I've found is that when one emphasizes teamwork, the competition doesn't go away, but it takes a more of an appropriate place. And so I would just say in a sutra, don't overstimulate individual competition, but or if it's there, you can use it, but also at the same time, try to express the sublimity of cooperation and not taking credit and things like that. Because when people hear about it, then they'll become inclined towards it also. There's a lot more to say about that, and I'll probably say it during the How to Set Up a Monthly Sankirtan Festival section of our SOS. It's a good starting place. Thank you for that. And thank you for everyone who joined us online, and for all of you who trudged through the rainy weather to come here this morning. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande, Nitai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo. Vanchakalpatrubhasha kripasanabe vachapatitanam bhavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah.
Nachari armarman, nachari armarman, nachari armarman, nachari armarman. Hey! Nachari armarman, nachari armarman, nachari armarman, nachari armarman.